Services right here, right now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them they have always wanted to write. And I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. And my co-host and producer for Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. Kevin wears many hats at Business Radio X. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Dr. Tim. How are you doing?
I am doing great, especially when we have a guest that dances to the intro music.
You can't beat that right there.
I've not had that happen before.
You know it's going to be a good show.
It's going to be a good show.
I can't help have the flamenco in me.
Okay, we are going to have fun today, I can tell. So how's your show going along, Kevin?
It's been going good. I'm doing a couple different shows, so.
Now, you're up to, last week it was one, now
it's
you
one,
got...
one, now it's two. It's
next
be
week, three?
Three, possibly.
Oh, my.
So they're throwing me at a lot of different stuff.
They like you, huh?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Well, what's the new one? You have one about
There's,
authors.
There's Meeting Pros, Meeting Planners.
Meeting Friend.
Meeting Pros.
Okay. And you do what?
I co-host it.
Okay.
Me and Taylor, actually. You know how he was in here the other day, so.
Okay. And when's that on?
It is on Wednesdays at 1:30 or 2, I believe. I need to should
if
know
I
that.
If I mark my calendar, I'll tune in tomorrow. Okay. Well, back in August, we tweaked Right Here, Right Now just a little. We went from interviewing business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals who had written a book or planned to write a book someday to interviewing our guests about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. But for today's show, we're going to revert to our original concept. Michelle Pembroski is in the process of writing a book about her personal journey, and Michelle Stevens' book came out at the end of 2012. I know you can't see the spelling, but neither one of them spelled their name correctly, from my perspective. Okay. In a span of 5 months and 1 week in 2007, Michelle Pembroski became...
Poremski. I'm sorry to interrupt. It's Poremski.
I've got to do better, don't I?
That's okay.
I'm good at that.
That's okay. Everybody misspells it, mispronounces it.
Okay. She became a widow, gave birth to her second child, and lost her mother to breast cancer. And understandably, she battled depression and exhaustion for years and wondered if she would ever be happy and laugh again. We know she's laughing. We've heard that already. But out of her journey to wholeness and health, Michelle found a team, Hot Widow, and she is currently writing the story of her journey to wholeness, happiness, and health. In Unmasking, One Woman's Hidden Pain Gives Way to Peace and Victory, Michelle Stevens shares her tumultuous journey in overcoming the scars and pain from being molested as a child and then experiencing domestic violence. Michelle hungered to tell her story, but had no idea how challenging the writing would be. Fair statement?
Fair statement,
okay.
Dr.
Tim. Now her book provides a means for her to bring hope to others who struggle with hidden pain. The two Michelles have joined me in the studio to share with us why they felt compelled to tell their stories. And I'm going to be asking them about what did each experience as the greatest challenge in writing and what are the rewards gained from writing their individual stories. And I'm going to start with Michelle.
That would be me.
That would be you.
Okay. The other Michelle. Michelle Poremski, yes.
Yeah.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Tim.
It's a delight.
Well, thank you. So you would like to know what my challenges are in...
Well, we're going to get into that, but first, in promoting this interview on Right Here, Right Now, I titled it Hot Widow and Intense Pain. So would you tell our listeners about the etymology of Hot Widow and that I'm really not being sexist?
No, I actually created that myself because, hot actually stands for Healthy, Optimistic, Thriving Widow. And when I became a widow, the last thing you feel is hot. The last thing that, especially when you're a younger woman, I was 39 when my husband took his life, and I was in incredible pain. I was 7 months pregnant at the time. It came out of the blue, and I felt devastated. I felt emotionally shredded. I felt depressed. My energy was just completely bottomed out. And I actually wondered, because I am sort of a type A woman. I like projects. I like to tackle life. And I like to go on adventures. And I couldn't even laugh. I didn't feel the joy that I usually felt. And I wondered, how will I ever find my way back to myself? How will I ever find my way back to feeling joyful again? And through the journey, it's almost been 6 years. April 2nd of 2013 will be 6 years since my husband passed away. And in that journey, I found ways to really be healthy, optimistic, and thriving, and to not let the circumstances define me, but to let my decisions within those circumstances define my life.
Okay. Why do you feel you're ready now to write about it?
I feel like I'm ready to write about it because I came to a place where I felt that everything was, in life's not perfect, but it was all working well together.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that there were strategies that I haven't read about or heard other people talking about during the grief journey.
Okay.
And I have read many books on grief. And I think one of the missing strategies is the health component. That's why we say healthy,
mm-hmm,
in terms of healthy, optimistic, thriving for hot widows. The health component of making sure that you have the right nutrients. Grief is actually physically depleting. It is physical, mental, and spiritual. And one of the things I think that we forget is that it depletes our body. And then in our depleted state, what do we get? And God bless them. A cavalcade of casseroles. So we are bombarded with simple sugars, they're comfort foods, and we're going to eat those while we're in a depressed state. Those comfort foods leach nutrients from our bodies because they become simple sugars. They leach the nutrients from our bodies and actually push us further down into depression. And that's what I did. I gained so much weight.
So I shouldn't have had a donut on my way in this morning.
Yes,
right?
But maybe you weren't grieving, so it was fine.
I have to say, I like the way you handle that grief, mm-hmm, thing. As some of you know, I was a hospice chaplain for a number of years. And what Michelle just said about the grieving process and the things we go into, absolutely, absolutely correct. What's the toughest part of what you're trying to do?
Interesting. Well, if I may just backtrack just for a moment, I think one of the important things for people while they're grieving is to make sure that they're properly nourished. Because if you nourish yourself properly,
mm-hmm,
then you will be able to have the foundation for your mind to deal with the next steps. And that's why I felt it's so important to talk about this and to write a book about it. Because in all the books that I read and all the counseling that I did, the greatest help that I received was when I nourished myself properly and I exercised. And then I was able, my mind was healthy enough to make the next productive steps. So what really helped me was engaging in the Iron Girl Triathlon. And because I engaged in a large project that I got a wonderful trainer to help me with, Robert Haddix at the time, and I completed the Iron Girl in 2009. I did it again in 2010 and represented the city of Atlanta. And now I've put together a group of awesome widowed moms, young widows, and we are Team Hot Widow, and we are the Hot Widow Iron Girl team. We're doing the Iron Girl together this May 19th in 2013. I think that the thing that is most challenging about writing this book, which is Hot Widow, Finding Your Groove in Grief, I am writing it because I want to give widows hope. I want to create what I needed at my ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
At my ground zero, I felt so isolated because when you think of a widow, she it's like you have a black cloud over her. She's sad. She's wilted.
Mm.
And when you're young, you don't want to be that. That's not hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to tell other women, there is hope. There's practical steps to get there, and you can get there. I was absolutely devastated, and from the practical steps that I took both healthfully, mentally, and spiritually, it is possible to get to a thriving place in life even after immense tragedy.
That is amazing. Dr. Tim knows that I love strong women. I grew up with two mother figures, and they raised me, and I think that's just a great message, and just having the hope out there for these women and having this support group. And it's not one of those, let's all get in a circle and cry and talk mm-hmm. about our pain. It's like, let's celebrate life and let's go out and do something. I think that's just amazing.
I can't even imagine what Kevin pictured there. And you probably were there at one point, but are certainly not now. The journey with a Hot Team has not...
With Team Hot Widow.
Team fun. Hot Widow has not... How should we say? I don't want to embarrass the entity, but it does has had an interesting... You're not allowed to use that name some places, right?
Well, yes. I don't want to say specifically where, but I think that I think that maybe for some religious organizations, the idea of calling widows hot, it's almost like an oxymoron. You don't think of a woman as a widow as being hot.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a young widow, mm-hmm. that's what you want to be. You want to, and I'm not saying hot as in the highly sexualized term. Yeah. I'm saying a healthy, strong, capable, hopeful person. And that when a woman, it doesn't matter what size you are, feeling beautiful is not about a size or an outfit or a haircut. It's about feeling confident
mm-hmm.
and capable and hopeful. And that's what I wanted widows to feel. So I thought, you know what? It best describes us. We're hot. We want to be hot. We're exercising together. We're going on adventures together. And that means that we're enjoying life. And I think sexy is the best. Happy is the best sexy. When you're happy, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. Mm-hmm. When you're confident, that is true sexiness.
Yeah.
And that's that has no age limitation, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I just wanted to bring you back in there since you started out with young. You know?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Do you have anything, Kevin, over here?
It's just amazing. It's inspiring. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, can I just say one thing? I think some of the strategies that I will be addressing that we do address on teamhotwidow.com and I will be addressing in my book, Hot Widow, Finding Your Groove in Grief. Grief is no respecter of persons. And grief comes in many different forms, mm-hmm. not just widowhood. It comes in terms of divorce. It comes when there are major life changes, when you move, when there's a job loss. And I think that sometimes we always turn to comfort foods or to activities that are not positive for us. And the strategies that we use as Team Hot Widow apply to every grief situation, not just to widows. Okay. So if you can broaden your mind a little bit, you know, follow us and you might find something on teamhotwidow.com that really speaks to you in, or speaks to a person who's dealing with grief in whatever form it comes.
Do you have women who are joining in with your process, whether they're going to be triathletes or Iron Woman or not, that they walk in and you see depression written all over them? Or do they come ready, all moving, or do you get the scope?
We get the scope. Our most recent widow who joined us, she became a widow in December, 2 months ago. And we have another widow who is only a year out. And so we actually go from a year, from 2 months ago to 8 years out.
Mm-hmm.
And we each help each other. We all have our moments. I'm not perfect. I'm not bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
There will be days that I'm having a hard time. And I can. What's wonderful is that we are a support system for each other. And we call up each other. We keep each other accountable to our exercise schedules. And we're going toward a goal together. And so our goal, our motto for the Iron Girl is to complete, not to compete. That it's all about us crossing the finish line together. And it's just a metaphor for crossing the finish lines for our goals together.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is so important and really the deeper reason of creating this group.
Okay. Well, you kind of answered this earlier, but I'm going to give you another shot at it in this framework. You know, I encourage business people to write the book that shows the unique approach their business takes. What do you believe sets your journey apart and your book apart from all the other books that are on the market in the same vein about coming out of being a widow?
I think there's almost a pseudo sainthood associated with widowhood.
Mm.
That when you become a widow, that somehow there's some desexualization of that term. A widow almost feels neutered, I hate to say it. Maybe I'm not speaking for all, that's mm-hmm. how I felt. And I think that to make a woman feel vibrant, feminine, strong, to reconnect with who she is as a woman. That is what sets us apart. I think that addressing the health issues, I haven't seen any grief books that I've read that really deal with how to truly nourish your body using green smoothies, the proper nutrients, mm-hmm. superfoods, and green juices, as well as a proper diet. How exercise actually affects the brain when it's gone through trauma. That when a brain in trauma actually fixates on the traumatic moment, and anyone who's gone through a trauma, a major trauma like a death, like I did, your brain fixates on that moment, and it's really hard to sleep. And I didn't really sleep well for 2 years. And so what I find helpful about what we do is actually incorporating exercise scientifically shows that it helps the brain mm-hmm. to move beyond that traumatic moment. So you stop fixating as much, you give your brain a rest, and you're able to strategize the next chapter of your life. Everybody talks about the lauded new normal of grief, you know, mm-hmm. when you've gone through grief and you establish your new normal. Well, you don't want your new normal to be half-baked, wilted, mm-hmm. boring. Wow. Mm-hmm. You want it to be vibrant, fabulous, and adventurous. And the strategies that we give through teamhotwidow.com and through my upcoming book, Hot Widow, Finding Your Groove in Grief, helps anyone who's going through grief find the pathway healthfully, optimistic, mm-hmm. healthy, optimistic, thriving. Those are our strategies to make for a fabulous life, even through tragedy.
So what book has influenced you?
Actually, the book Shattered Dreams by Larry Crabb was one of the most amazing and honest books that I had ever read. It's a phenomenal perspective because Larry says that oftentimes we hope and pray for God to give us safety,
mm-hmm.
security. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, keep my family safe. I pray that. Keep my family safe. Help us to be wise. Help us to, preserve what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes life or God comes in and shatters that dream. And it looks so wrong, so evil, so hurtful. And Dr. Stanley, I actually listened to a sermon that he had given. I had it on CD, and I listened to it for a year. And it was Our Choices in the Midst of Tragedy. And again, he said, your choices define you in tragedy. And this book, Shattered Dreams, talks about how over and over again, there were examples of people whose lives were shattered. But because their safety and security was shattered, they actually became more than what they would have been.
What I like about that is that is what is truly scriptural. Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading from Leviticus this morning and Numbers. Poor Moses. You know, his life was shattered, but that's beside the point. So, hey, how do people contact you?
You can contact me through teamhotwidow.com. You can also send me an email at info@teamhotwidow.com. And my contact information is on our website.
Okay, great. You're going to stay with us, aren't you, while
Absolutely.
I turn
I wouldn't
and
miss it.
Interview Michelle.
I wouldn't miss it.
Okay. Oh, Michelle, it's Hi. So good to see you.
Hi.
How are you?
Good morning, Dr. Tim. Fine, and you?
I'm doing great. Now, I'm going to start off with a bit of disclaimer. You've been a client of Right Choice Services, so, in fact, I was your writing coach and editor.
Oh, yes, you were.
And we're still friends, right?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, you're still my friend. I've healed, Dr. Tim.
So what brought you to the point in your life journey to finally say, now's the time for me to write?
Well, Dr. Tim, it took about 6 years, actually. I started journaling and writing and understanding that the story needed to be told for others to be able to be healed and truly unmasked. So I started journaling, and I've been a writer all my life, and I knew that this story needed to be told. We had a women's conference about 6 years ago, and it was called Unmasking, Conquering Your Hidden Kingdoms. And at that time, I was given the directions that I was going to write the book by God. And it came out to be Unmasking. And it's truly that so many people try to hide behind a facade, behind a mask that says that I'm okay, I'm doing fine, when in all actuality, there are some unhealed hurts, some unhealed wounds, and even some issues of self-depression, issues that we haven't even touched, but we continue to say that we're okay. And I realized that the community, especially the Christian community, needed to unmask.
Okay, I like that. Mm-hmm. What was the most challenging part of writing?
Well, the most challenging part of writing is thinking that you are writing and then being told by a writing coach that you're really not telling your story.
You got on that sooner than I thought. But that's right. Some more about that, would you please?
Yeah. When I started to write, so many people had said, Michelle, you're a gifted writer. You have, you know, the gift to write. And I really did. I've always loved writing. And by the time I got ready to go to publish, I said, okay, it needed to be edited. And so I got introduced to this individual by the name of Dr. Tim Morrison, and I sent him my material that everybody else had praised. And it was Times New Roman, 12-pitch font, double space, ready for publishing, so I thought. And once he got it, he said, Michelle, I know you have a story, but it's not in what you sent me. You're not telling your story. And the hardest part was getting what I saw in my mind to reflect on paper, to actually tell a story and flow. And so with work and rework and with rework again, and then really going into myself and telling the story with my five senses, the sights, the sounds, the smell, and really revisiting those places where I really thought I had touched, but I was only dealing with the surface. And so much attention wasn't based on grammar and adjectives and adverbs. Dr. Tim, you really wanted me to tell the story intensely, truthfully. And that's when I took that approach, it flowed. It actually took 6 years altogether, but 2 years with you. And after that, it was published and it's being circulated.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What I like about that, though, because I remember that initial reaction, because you had said, I've put it all out there, and I wrote back and I said, you may think you have, but I don't see the blood, I don't see the tears, I don't feel them. Mm-mm. And that was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember suggesting you read a couple of books where I thought people had actually done that, but the change and the shift was powerful. I've never asked you this, but those people who thought your first draft was good, how did they react when they saw the finished product?
Well, actually, one of them was my professor that encouraged me to write and said I was a gifted writer. When she got the work back, the finished piece, she was amazed, and she actually endorsed the back of the book and said that it was not just for anybody who wanted to overcome child abuse and promiscuity, but it was for anyone who needed to be a survivor of a painful past.
Was writing therapeutic for you? Did it help you heal?
Yes, very much so. Once I was encouraged into let my feelings deal with my feelings, I dealt with each individual feeling as they came up. I wrote about them. Sometimes I cried, and at points I was like, okay, Dr. Tim, that's it. I'm not going to write anymore. And you would push back and say, you know, you've overcome, you know, childhood molestation, promiscuity, domestic violence, and now you want to tell me you don't have the strength to re-edit 50 pages? Do I need to come over there with a 2x4 and wrap you on the head?
Can we edit that out? You hit the stop button.
But when I got there, man, it was powerful. It was release like never before. And then I realized I was writing for a purpose greater than who I was.
And that's the key. When we start off writing for ourselves, that's wonderful. It is therapeutic, and it helps us to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But when we push beyond that, as you did, look at all the people whose lives you're touching now with that book.
Yes, sir.
You've been doing some speaking, haven't you?
Yes, sir. I've done some speaking, actually some conferences for women who want to heal. And then I've did some private sessions where people come up to me and say, Michelle, thank you so much for telling my story. You know, I wanted to tell my story. I was too afraid to tell my story, but thank you for telling my story. And at that time, I have an opportunity to minister them and let them know that no matter how low you go, there's a God that's there to hear you, and heal you.
You gave me the opportunity to be present when you brought your book out in the church that you attend.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, and I joked with you a little bit that day, I felt so at home. Sea full of African-Americans and this pale-skinned guy in the midst of it. But, you know, I had lived in West Africa for 3 years, and amidst, I was the only other than my wife, you know, and it just felt good to be home, so to speak, and the people were so receptive.
Yeah, my pastor is, our church is a loving church with a friendly atmosphere, and that's where I got a majority of my healing, mm-hmm. was in that atmosphere. And my pastor once said something to me that I thought was so crazy, and I write about it in the book. He said, Michelle, if you don't allow yourself to open up and be hurt, then you're going to miss opportunities of true love and affection. And I was thinking, how crazy is that? Who wants to be hurt? So I did actually open myself up, not to be hurt, but to have opportunities to learn how to love and love back. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's an amazing church. It was part of my healing journey for God to place me there.
And then when you did start to write and go deeper,
mm-hmm.
you found more healing, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Actually, people joke about the book now saying that she's transformed. You made note of it when you came in. You was like, oh, your hair is shorter. But God did a true transformation in me, and it was just like Michelle said, it was a healthy, optimistic, and a thriving. And that happened on the inside of me, and it's just like a transformation. And at that point, I realized that I had to really transform. I couldn't tell people about healing if I really wasn't healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't look like the healing I was talking about if I didn't look like the healing I was talking about. And even with that, I am doing a full transformation of mind, body, spirit, and soul. So like Michelle talked about, I looked at where I gained 40 pounds as a security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
I gained that weight as a form of protection so no one would even look at me, let alone violate me.
I did that too.
And it was like, okay, good. So now I look like this. But that really, I was suppressing the who I was and who I needed to be to bring other people to a healthy place and bring them to God. And so with that, I have enlisted a wonderful personal trainer. Her name is Cynthia Florence. And she is actually helping me with the body transformation. And it's grueling at times, but I have to push myself to a place where I really want to be healthy. And I understand that the weight is not healthy. It served as a blanket, a security blanket,
sure.
back then, but it's really not a healthy place.
You don't
place.
Need it, no.
Mm-mm.
You know, as you say that, I picture the first time you and I met, which was a Starbucks down on Powers Ferry Road, and that person that I met that day and who I see across from me in the studio today, same person, but not really. And I see that vibrancy. I see that healthy optimism and thriving nature.
Yeah.
We doing all right over here, Michelle?
We're doing awesome.
We're doing good, aren't we? Michelle, if I could, children and youth being molested by religious leaders or significant family members, that's been in the news a lot of late. You experienced all of that.
Yes, sir.
But then you still turned to the church for comfort and hope after a church leader made it an unsafe place. Can you talk about that? What was that pain like? You were violated by the one place we're told we can turn for comfort and safety. And, you know, of course, the Roman Catholic Church is getting hit on this. But it's not just the Roman Catholic Church.
No, sir.
If you would share what you feel comfortable with, okay?
Okay. Well, it was about the age of 16 or 17, and it was a deacon, not at this church where I presently attend, but it was one that I showed respect to in a place of authority. And I was dating his son, and so I think that gave him the permission he thought necessary to violate me. And at that point, I was because I said I would never go back to church. Mm-hmm. I would never, ever go back to church. I was like, if this is the way church people act, I don't want to be a part of it. But I understand that it had to happen so. It happened so that I would know how to go back and tell people that all people in the church are not like that. And, yes, he did violate me. And it was almost like I forgave him within an instant. But I had got so good at covering up things and saying that they didn't happen and fixing my mind to say, oh, it didn't matter, and jumping up the next day like nothing happened, because that's what I was accustomed to. But I came away from the church, and that was the very place I needed to be. And so with that, I think God knew that I needed to be in a safe haven. And that's why he directed me to the church that I went to. And that's why I received my healing. Even at the point when my pastor, who I know has nothing for love, nothing but love for me, when I first encountered him, I was like, you can give me a hug, but stay at a distance. And I always had a guard up until I really, really understood. And he actually showed us how to love each other. I still see that deacon sometimes today. I haven't addressed him mm-hmm. about it, but he knows when he sees me. And again, it's not in the only in the Catholic Church. It is in the Baptist Church. But a lot, and I want to go on the edge here and say, a lot of African-American churches just don't want to discuss it. And it is something that we need to discuss. It happens more than what we would like to talk about.
And let me expand that to say, and it's not just the Baptists, mm-hmm. it's all of the Protestant mm-hmm. traditions. Mm-hmm. We all have those people, mm-hmm. unfortunately. What do you do 9 to 5? What's your day-to-day work?
9 to 5, I actually work in Marietta as a judicial administrative.
Okay. The reason I lift that up is writing is not your full-time occupation.
No, sir.
You found time after work, on breaks, vacation, whatever, to write.
Yes. That's basically what I use, time on vacation, on breaks. At lunch, they would laugh at me. I would put up a sign on the back of my chair and say, at lunch. And I take that hour to write and review my material and get it ready. And then as soon as my lunch was over, I take my sign down and go back. So it was days that I didn't eat, but I wrote, and it helped me get to the destination.
You were determined.
I was very determined.
And what book has influenced your life?
One of the books that influenced me the most, and I found it actually after I had wrote my book, it was called What If? And it is Writing Exercises by Ann Benrays and Pamela Painter. And it introduces specific exercises designed for mastering the art of writing, nonfiction. And it has about 75 exercises in it for beginners, and it teaches you developing and refining your basic skills.
Mm-hmm. I've got that book. I'm going to have to go home and look at it. I've had my back turned on you, Kevin. I'm sorry. Do you have a question for Michelle?
I just think it's a powerful message. And, again, another strong woman in the studio. I love that. Michelle, how do, as a society, we address this problem? How do we bring it to light, and how do people just get out there and stop it? Because I know everyone knows it's wrong, but it's still a prevalent problem in society.
Well, Kevin, thank you for asking that. A lot of children advocacy programs are out there and very busy, some in Marietta, some that I'm working with. A lot of churches now are dealing with the issues, and my pastor was very, I think he was very courageous to let me come out with this book, knowing some of the backlash that would come. But he's a strong man, and he knew that the message needed to be told. So we need to continue in women's groups, in children's group, in churches, everywhere we go, teach our daughters, even our sons this day and time, what feels wrong and why and where to go, and give them a safe place. So many times people don't feel safe because of the ridicule or the shame that they're going to encounter. We just need to open up a safe place for people to come so that they can really unmask and then feel healing and then transform into who we were created to be.
There's awesome. Your answer.
That's a great answer.
We like that one, don't we? So what advice would you give to people thinking about writing or going on that kind of a journey, Michelle?
I would say journal, journal, and journal again. And every time you have a thought, write it down. Take a pen and paper with you wherever you go, and then just start to write. And just like you told me, Dr. Tim, just write, mind map. Every thought that comes to your mind, write it down and then flush it out. And then the most important thing, like everything I thought was there was for a reason. And you were like, some of the stuff, Michelle, as important as you think it is, is not that important. So a developed writer will get to a place where they can iron out what is important and what is not important. But the main thing I would say is just to write.
Great.
Write.
And I want to compliment you, because as you share these things, and you're making me look good, and I appreciate that. I've had other clients who are not nearly as receptive to that kind of advice. In fact, I have been fired. But then, interestingly enough, they came around and rehired me. And the thing that I think we can learn from Michelle is that your friends and your family are going to say, this is great, regardless, because they know you, they love you, and you wrote it.
Yes, sir.
And they would like to write, but they haven't, and you have. So quite frankly, when people come to me and say, my friends and my family love it, I start to quiver. But you stuck with it, and that's the big thing. You stuck with it, and you were willing to go in and pull out this amazing story. How do people contact you?
You can reach me on Michelle, and it's M-E-C-H-E-L-L-E, Stephens, STEPHENS.com. And actually on there I have started a blog, Dr. Tim, for people to walk through their transformation.
Great.
And share their stories. And I'm basically going to put a before and after picture of me for my transformation, for my weight loss. So many people have already said they've encountered traumatic experience that has forced them to put on weight that they really want to get off. And so we're journeying together to a total transformation, and we're just blogging whatever comes up. We blog. The name of the blog is The Awakening, like the Jordan River, and it was named lovingly after my grandbaby Jordan, who passed at 41 days. And it was a time of reflection for me and an awakening. Her middle name was Alana, which meant the awakening. And at that point, I realized what mattered most. And so we have lovingly named our blog The Awakening. And so women are at a point of awakening, and they put their aha moments on the blog. And we walk together, we journey together to a place of wholeness and to transformation. So it's michellestephens.com. I have a email address. It's watch, W-A-T-C-H, God, G-O-D, W-R-K, at bellsouth.net as well.
Okay. We have hot and half. Did you catch that? Holiness and transformation, healthy, optimistic, and thriving. Hey, the mics have been open, but now it's when I officially say I'm opening up the mics. You guys have questions for each other? Kevin, you got anything you want to throw out there?
I actually have. I'm very inspired by you, Michelle, because because as I am in the process of writing this book, I find things that are very difficult to talk about because it was so painful. And so listening to you plow through those painful moments and actually expose them, I think those are the speed bumps for me, is that I wonder, oh my gosh, can I actually say this and share this with people who don't know me? And I'd love to hear how you work through that.
Wow. Well, Michelle, at first I was a bit reserved in what I was going to say, but then I realized that it was for the greater good, that I just bear all. And I mean, I had some anxieties before the release of the book, but once it was out, it was like, it's my story. I'm sticking to it. I can't take it back. It happened. However embarrassing, even to go to the point to go get the warrant from my domestic violence case and put the exact verbiage from the warrant in my book. Mm-hmm. It had to happen so that somebody else can say, you know, I'm not too embarrassed. So many times people walk around embarrassment for things that it's happened before. It's really nothing new under the sun. You're just being brave and telling the story that other people might be set free.
Thank you. I will take that back to my computer and
just be bold.
And be bold. Oh.
You're overcomer already. I mean,
well,
yeah.
Thank you. I think that there are parts of my story and of my late husband's story. He died of carbon monoxide poisoning in his vehicle, and it was so, so very painful. Mm-hmm. And I still love him
yes.
so much, and I wouldn't want to dishonor by talking about it. But at the same time, I feel like there are other families yes. out there who are in isolation because they don't talk about the pain that comes from those kind of decisions.
Yeah, and I did have an opportunity to look at your webpage, and I did see that, and I had already said to myself, what a brave woman to tell, you know, that story, because so many people, and that's another taboo, people don't want to deal with suicide. And that right there, mm-hmm. you had already broken the barriers more than what you could imagine, because so many people are in a shame or behind the mask because they don't want to talk about suicide. So we say, you know, depression is not an issue. And so, I mean, but we are wearing a mask because it is an issue. And unless we deal with it, there are choices that other people will make. And because we swept it under the rug. So there mm-hmm. is. I mean, that was so powerful. When I read that on your webpage, I was like, how amazing, how brave.
He, I came home from the aquarium, and he had gone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where he was. He'd left me a note. And saying that he'd be back in a few days. And the way that it happened, from the investigator said it was a suicide. I think there are family members that would rather believe that it's an accident. So I actually kind of keep a little bit of that mm-hmm. door open. But I have processed it as a suicide and with my children so that we actually go to Kate's Club. You can find them at katesclub.org or the link.org. And they provide wonderful services for children who are grieving that are very life empowering. And I figured that by dealing with it at an early stage, that they didn't come around at, say, 16, 17, 18, full of anger because they haven't been able to process it. They have... It's sort of part of the landscape of our lives, mm-hmm. and we understand that sometimes, from what I believe, people are in such pain that it is not a malicious thing. It mm-hmm. is just a response to intense pain.
Right.
And that there is forgiveness and love. In the family, I say to my daughters when they asked me, I said, you know, because they said, did Daddy know what he was doing? Mm-hmm. And I said, I think so. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, does Mommy ever make a mistake? And they go, yeah. I go, do you still love Mommy? And they go, yeah. And I said, well, Daddy made a mistake mm-hmm. that I bet he would take back a million jillion times mm-hmm. over, mm-hmm. but he can't. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we love our family members even when they make mistakes.
Yes.
And we accept them and we thank God for the beauty that they brought in our lives. I would not have my beautiful children. I would not have what I have without him.
You wouldn't have the testimony. And so yeah. that's why I say you are braver than you can ever yeah. imagine already.
When Michelle's saying that to Michelle, I go back to your book Unmasking.
Uh-huh.
And Sam stood by you in spite of your best effort
yes.
to not have him stand by you. Can you share just because you started dating, you felt there was an attraction, and then you decided he couldn't be trusted, mm-hmm. and it was more you than it was him,
yes.
and all that stuff. You want to reflect a little bit on that?
Well, Sam, my husband now of 17 years, we call him chapter, they have officially titled him chapter 17, 18, because that's where it comes in the book. When I met him, I was so accustomed to sabotaging anything that mm-hmm. felt like love, anything that looked like love. My wall was up. So I would do things like he would say that he's going to prepare dinner, and I would say, okay. And when I get there, I would come in with a McDonald's bag, and I was like, wow, you're doing it. You're good. You're pushing him away. So I intentionally try to push him away, and yet he stayed there. He stayed there through all my ups and downs, and he's such an awesome man, and he encourages me daily. You know, Michelle, get out there, tell your story. And he's an awesome man. And so when I met Dr. Tim, he said, you know, your husband has a book. I was like, wait a minute. I'm the writer. He's not the writer. But he said, what would make someone fall in love with somebody that had that degree of pain and stick around? And so I have learned what true love looks like. I have been able to identify it. I have been able to embrace it, accept it, and I'm riding the journey of true love. So that's my Big Sam, chapter 17, 18, man.
But there's also a little Sam.
Yes, sir.
That's why we talk about Big Sam, right?
Yeah, there's a little Sam. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else from either of you?
No, I find that very encouraging because I am still on the occasional dating path. And I do the same sabotage things from time to time because I don't want somebody to get as close. Mm-hmm. You know, because, wow, we got hit hard.
Yeah.
And so I find that interesting that that you went through the process and found somebody so lovely. That's wonderful and encouraging.
Yes, yes.
Well, I've been delighted to be able to bring the two of you together. I knew it'd be an easy show. All I had to do was say Michelle and hope somebody answered. And I knew I wasn't worried there either. So, but, you know, the clock is on us. That always happens. And we welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or be your guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. All you have to do is send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin, for keeping me online, on track, and all those things.
It's easy when you have such great guests.
Isn't it, though? We just kind of sit back and let it roll. That's for sure. And thank you to our guest, Michelle Pembroski. Did I get it right that time?
Poremski.
Close. Poremski. The answer would be no, I did not. And Michelle Stevens. Okay. Michelle, number one, your contact information again.
info@teamhotwidow.com. You can also check out our website at teamhotwidow.com. And we're also on Facebook at teamhotwidow.com.
You got it covered. That's great. And Michelle, number two, your contact information.
It is michellestevens.com, M-E-C-H-E-L-L-E, Stevens, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S.com. Our email address is watchgodwrk@bellsouth.net.
Great. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services and how we help individuals write the book they've always wanted to write at www.write, spelled W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email, invite them to listen live or to the downloads on the website. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time at righterherightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.